Lesson number 4, a second attempt. Without proper housing for the newly arrived families, surrounded by enormous piles of rubble, which had been moldering after the 3 attacks against Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, harassed by the surrounding tribes, filled with foreboding for the future, discouraged by the complaints of the old-timers whose memories of past glories were enhanced by the passing decades, the builders of the temple faced the daily hostility of the Samaritans. Their early hopes, revised by the prompt and helpful decree of Cyrus, had faded. Stirred up by false reports, a usurper on the Persian throne, named Pseudo-Smerdis, even forbade the continuance of the enterprise. And for 15 years, the work had come to a dismal halt. But God did not forsake his people, nor abandon his prediction about rebuilding the temple, the restoration of Jerusalem, and the repopulating of her environs. Then heaven-inspired prophetic voices began to speak again. Part number 1. Helping hands of the prophets of Haggai and Zechariah. The Samaritans were the main movers against the building of the temple. They sent letters containing false charges against the motives and activities of the Jews to the Persian court, while at the same time they played every dirty trick they could think of to spite and thwart the builders in their tasks. But God raised up the prophets Haggai and Zechariah to encourage his people. Haggai's short book covers only a few months of history. In it he tells of the abandonment of the project by the temple builders in order to better their personal affairs. But they soon discovered that the opposite had taken place. The prophet urged them to put first things first, promising that God would take care of them. Haggai's key word is consider. In other words, reason from cause to effect, and vice versa. What God has done for his faithful people in days gone by, he will do again. Think, we are part of God's program, he kept emphasizing. Spiritually as well as temporally, the Israelites were in a pitiable state. So long had they murmured and doubted. So long had they chosen to make personal interests first, while viewing with apathy the Lord's temple in ruins, that many had lost sight of God's purpose in restoring them to Judea, Ellen White notes. The lack of temporal prosperity was the result of neglect to put God's interest first. Let me emphasize that. The lack of temporal prosperity, as Haggai said, you earn money and put it in bags with holes. It just disappears. Was the result of neglect to put God's interests first. This thought is vital to an understanding of the reasons for the current impasse. As soon as Governor Zerubbabel, the high priest Joshua, the builders responded to God's challenge, the work went forward rapidly. Within 23 days of Haggai's appeal, the difficulties suddenly grew less. Part number 2. Official misgivings in Persia. Darius overthrew the Pseudo-Smerdis and gained the throne of Persia. On the Behistun rock, he ordered a record of his achievements to be carved in 3 languages. But there was so much treason and rebellion in the air that it is no wonder that the Persian court was sensitive to rumors of revolt in Palestine and insisted the things be checked out. So the Samaritans' false accusations paid out for a little while. The Persian investigators wished the work on the temple at Jerusalem stopped until they could consult with the king regarding their findings. But the Jewish builders continued to work, encouraged by their consciousness that God was on their side. This encouragement resulted from the messages of the prophets, who told them, "Keep on working." Just as the apostles continued to preach, in spite of the warnings of the Sanhedrin in the early days of Christianity, and were prospered because the Spirit was on their side, the builders in all Jerusalem were protected because the God of heaven and earth was taking care of them. Reports of false accusations, cunning twists given to the events taking place around them, roused suspicions in Persia. But the explanations given by the Jewish leaders finally turned the tide in their favor. And we must never forget that back of it all, God was working. People were praying. God was answering prayers. His design was slowly being carried out. Part number 3, Darius' decree. This Darius, of course, is not the one who overthrew Babylon years before. This is another Darius. When reminded by the Samaritans that the Jews had been rebellious through the centuries, and by the Jews that Cyrus had authorized them to rebuild the temple and restore the city, Darius instituted an investigation of the facts and found evidence of the truth of the Jewish story. Cyrus was the revered founder of Medo-Persia. When it was discovered that he had indeed ordered the return of the exiled Jews, the rebuilding of their temple, even providing resources for this purpose, authorizing the collecting of funds to carry out the work, Darius was influenced issue his decree, corroborating the earlier edict of Cyrus. So first of all, it's the God of heaven, then it's Cyrus, now it's Darius. The king's decree ordered Tatnai, the Persian governor of Palestine, to see to it that nothing was allowed to hinder the work of restoration, and empowered him with life and death authority to put down all opposition. This effectively stopped the harassment of the Samaritans and others, and the temple was erected. Darius even asked the Jewish leaders to pray for his prosperity. It was true in the days of Ezra, as it was later in the church, that the messengers of the cross must arm themselves with watchfulness and prayer, and move forward with faith and courage, working always in the name of Jesus. Acts of the Apostles 2:30. Part number 4. The temple is finished. Buoyed up by this encouraging turn of events, the Jewish leaders joined with the people in building, and they prospered. Working with diligence and intensity, their efforts were rewarded. From this history, this principle emerges. When God opens the way for the accomplishment of a certain work and gives assurance of success, the chosen instrumentality must do all in his power to bring about the promised result. There are some who think that when God takes over, we've got nothing to do. We have got to work with our might, while God works with the might of His Spirit and His irresistible grace. When He opens the way and gives assurance of success, the chosen instrumentality must do all in His power to bring it about. In proportion to the enthusiasm and perseverance with which the work is carried forward will be the success given. Prophets and Kings 2:63. As they worked, the prophet Zechariah kept before their minds the promise of Jehovah, I am with you. Jesus repeated this very promise to his disciples just before he left for his Father's home. I will be with you. The Jews began their second attempt at building the temple on September the 21st, 520 BC, Haggai 1:14-15. After 4.5 years, they completed the job on March 12, 1515, Ezra 6:15. The previous temple had taken Solomon's builders 7 years to complete. It's very interesting to note Ellen White's description that when Solomon imported the builders from Phoenicia, they argued about wages, they struck the job, things took much longer, an unpleasant spirit was awakened in the building of the Temple of Solomon. Now the children of Israel who returned under Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel and the others, they didn't bother with externals. They wouldn't even let the Samaritans help them. They were going to build. And they built in 4.5 years what Solomon's builders had taken 7 years to build. When Ezra wrote of the history, he acknowledged that the happy results had come about through the predicted will of God, the encouraging preaching of the prophets, the decrees of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes, who provided funds to beautify the house of the Lord. The total lapse of time from the return of the first groups of Jews to the dedication of the temple was some 32 years. Although they had been occasionally discouraged and forced to allow the work to stumble and even to stop, prayer, trust in God, and hard work on the part of the people paid off. The Lord had cared for their external problems, and His grace had empowered them to play their role. They call across the centuries to us today never to give up. Part number 5, Dedication and Passover. At the dedication of the temple, 12 sacrifices were offered by all Israel. Each of these victims, as we already noted, required a stationary man, as the rabbis called him, to represent his tribe in carrying out the task of laying on of hands, the confession of sins, and the killing of the animals. He did this on behalf of the entire tribe, every member of which could not possibly have participated. This indicates that there were no lost tribes. Representatives of them all, 10 taken by Assyria in the days of Isaiah, 2 captured in the time of Jeremiah, participated in the rebuilding and dedication of the temple. So those who talk about the 10 lost tribes have forgotten to read the book of Ezra. The word sacrifice, found here, is a technical term meaning a peace offering. In fact, it is used in this sense hundreds of times in the Old Testament. A review of the law of the peace offering indicates that the victim's blood was sprinkled and the suet, or fat from the inwards, was burned on the altar, while its body was eaten at a sacred feast of gratitude. The rabbis suggest that at least 10, and at most 20, should participate in such a feast. The Passover sacrifice was a peace offering, and in the upper room, 13 partook of the Last Supper. A large number of sacrifices indicated by Ezra and Nehemiah, points to the crowds which attended and participated in this feast. Some days later, the happy people celebrated the Passover, at which many who had turned from the heathen practices of their neighbors, were born again, took part, Ezra 6:21. As the people entered into the program of rebuilding, the Spirit brought about a revival and reformation among the people. Ellen White notes, "When we are hedged about on every side, this is the time above all others to trust in God and in the power of His Spirit. The exercise of living faith means an increase of spiritual strength and the development of an unfaltering trust. It is thus that the soul becomes a conquering power. Before the demand of faith, the obstacles placed by Satan across the pathway of the Christian will disappear, for the powers of heaven will come to his aid." In this week's lesson, we see just how the Lord worked in his patience, in his continued grace, in his continual stirring up by his testimonies of his people. He brought about a state of mind through which his cause could reach the consummation he desired. The temple was rebuilt and consecrated to his name.